There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You have found the Shanny Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanny Pants Show. Thank you so much for being here. And can you just introduce yourself for the audience and let them know who you are, and then we'll get started.
Yes. My name is Elisa Flores. I am in Texas, Luling, Texas. I was born and raised in a cult called La Luz del Mundo, the Light of the World. This is a high control religious group, and it goes under a church, but it's actually a cult. But people can say, no, it's not. And everybody has their right to their opinion and their thoughts or whatever. I know what it is, but sometimes I still say it's church because that's what I was brought up in, you know, saying La Luz del Mundo right. Church or the Light of the World Church. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was born into this. I didn't have a choice. Many people say, oh, how could you do this or how could you do that? And but when you're born into it, you don't know anything different. You don't know that these things are wrong. You don't know that these are manipulations. You don't know that you're brainwashed. You don't know these things because this was your whole life. It's your identity. And that's the thing, is your whole identity is the church, the cult. It's your whole identity. And even getting out, stepping out of it, it's really like shattering. It's life shattering to realize, what am I without this? What am I? Because this was my identity. How do I dress? How do I act? You're like a fish out of a bowl, like lost, yeah. Drowning, trying to keep your head above water. Should I do this? Should I do that? You have freedoms, and you feel like, oh wow, this is, I can do these things now. But then you kind of still feel that guilt of doing those things.
Yep.
And it's very conflicting. Like, you fight within yourself because you think, God's going to punish me if I do these things. But if I don't experience them, then I'm going to go out of this world without experiencing these things. But it's a sin or is it not a sin? Like, you fight within yourself, and it becomes a fight with yourself daily to be okay.
Right.
Understand that you're not in that control anymore, but it's still it's a fight.
Yeah. It still has somewhat of a, you know, control over you, even though once you're out, it's not like it's like, oh, yay, I'm out. It's always a process for everyone.
Yes. Yes. And it's life shattering. It really is. To be at a point where, like, wow, I have the freedom to do what I want. But then afterwards, I'm depressed because I lose my whole community or my siblings or something like that. And so it's like it's like a roller coaster. Mm. You're one minute all excited and because you have these freedoms to do stuff and you could go where you want. You don't have to ask permission. But then after that, you're like, but I miss my family. I miss my community. I miss the church. I miss the socializing with the people because they weren't my family.
Right. Yeah. No, it's so true. Now, what you said, you were born into the cult. So were your parents also born into it, or did they join?
No, my parents converted into it, and they were converted. I was 4 months, my mother was 4 months pregnant when she came into this belief. Mm. Her and my father, they were looking for something. My father was really, really having a hard time because he was an alcoholic, and he was looking for something to help him. And he found, and there was this person that was, that would invite him to go a lot to the church. And he was like, no. And then one day he had a drunk bend, and he woke up and he had a dog licking him because he had thrown up, because he had passed out, thrown up, and a dog was licking him. And he decided that he needed to do a change. So when the guy invited him to go to church again, he accepted. Mm. And he went into this with a need. He had a need. He had a void that he was trying to fill. Mm. And you're going into somewhere and you're broken. Then you find a place that they need you. They need you to do this. They want help from this or whatever. So you fill your time. What you're doing is you're filling that void with being occupied with the things that the church tells you to do. Mm. And so that's how he got from, I'm no longer drinking or whatever, because my time is being consumed by the church. They need me here. They want me here. They need this and I can do it. They want this and I can do it. So he found what he needed through this particular belief. And he was, when he went in, like, he went in hardcore. He went into full belief. He went into changing his whole way of thinking, his whole life. And he felt like he needed to show everybody this path. And he did. He went around and started preaching the new doctrine that he had, and converted his family and opened churches as well. And
wow.
Yeah. And it was something that from the beginning, like, because he had that void and he felt that God filled that void, that this was his calling. Mm. His calling was to talk about God. His calling was to bring people. And so that's what he did.
Hmm. Now, what location was this at when he started?
In Houston. It was Houston.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
That's where he started.
And then he started helping build new churches.
He was considered a local laborer. Okay. And what that was is you go to different areas and you preach to people and you talk to people and you bring in new souls. Mm. He opened a church in Luling, Texas, and that's where I'm at right now. Okay. He opened a church in Nacogdoches, Louisiana, several churches there in Florida. So he did all of this missionary work out of his own pockets.
So it's not like he has a job, like they offer him a job. It's all volunteer basis.
Yes.
Wow. Oh. And so what did he do? How did your family survive with him spending so much time doing that? Did he also have another job?
No.
Like
at first he was a truck driver.
Okay.
And then he worked for Coca-Cola and he hurt his back. And so when he hurt his back, he could no longer work like that. Mm. So my mother, she was a manager at some apartments. So we lived in apartments. And then from there, my dad would do like odd jobs and stuff like that. And then my mom, she became a notary, started doing income tax. She started a business.
Wow.
So my dad would go and my mom would be the one taking care of, well, because we were nine, my mom would work.
Mm-hmm.
Us older ones would take care of the little ones.
Okay.
So we were the parents. We were the ones who cared for everything. Took my oldest sister was the cook.
Okay.
My brother was like the disciplinary or making sure everybody got their homework done. I was the third one, so I was the mother to the little ones. So mm-hmm. I was the one taking care of the little ones. And my sister, the older one, she's like the awesome cook. awesome
so three. Something good came from that.
Yes. But so we took care of ourselves, basically.
Wow.
My mom worked, and my dad, he would help my mom, but he was gone a lot.
Yeah. And then your dad, obviously.
Let me give you this quick little story. So,
please.
My mom, when she got into the church, when she got baptized, she was 4 months pregnant. My mom, since she was American, because this is a Mexican-based church.
Mm.
So, my mom, she became a notary public. And so she would fix papers for ministers and for the apostle, because we have an apostle. Mm. And she would fix papers for him. So she had done some work for him. And my mom said she was pregnant. And so he told her, if you have a little girl, you're going to name her Elisa Flores. Elisa Flores is the mother of the apostle. So he named me his mother's name. Yeah.
Wow. I was going to ask you that about the name, because I'm like, wait, your name is the same. So who was the apostle when this happened during
Samuel.
That time? Samuel.
Samuel Joaquin Flores was the apostle at the time when I was born. Aaron was the first apostle, and Samuel is the youngest son of Aaron. And then after Samuel was Nason. But so I was...
Wow.
He named me, basically. So when I was born, my dad called him, because my dad and all of them, since it was a small church at that time, my dad had access to a number for him, because my mom did work for him.
Mm.
And so, he said, okay, it's a little girl. She was born. And I said, okay, give her the name of my mother, Elisa Flores.
Wow.
So that's why I have that name.
Oh, crazy. And now, was he local in Houston at that time, or he was just the overall apostle
in the church? The apostles are based in Guadalajara, Mexico.
Okay.
And they send their arms, their legs, their mouth, their feet to go out to the places which are their ministers. Okay. And their ministers are the ones that bring us the word or the revelation of the apostle of God. So the apostle is usually based in Guadalajara, but they travel. They do tours.
Okay. Yes. And was it always so exciting, like, when they would come to your area?
Yes. It was like a big show.
Oh.
It's like, I never understood this, but I see how people go to concerts, and they go to their fan, they're like the biggest fans, and the person passes by and they're crying and they're trying to reach for them and trying to touch them or whatever. We did the same thing to the apostle.
Wow.
But we did it, and I know we did it, but I felt like it was a learned thing.
Mm. Right.
Which to us, he was our God. Without him, we didn't have salvation.
Mm.
I will tell you a few things that we were taught. We were taught from birth, because the indoctrination starts at birth.
Mm.
And so we're taught that the apostle is the most important person on the earth. And only through him, he can forgive our sins. And he's the only one that can forgive our sins. And we have salvation as long as there is the apostle on earth. We're taught that he is the breath of our breath. Anything that we have is because of him. Anything that we are is because of him. And any prayers we do or whatever, we always give thanks to God for him.
Mm.
Because of him, we have everything.
Wow.
So he was our God.
Right.
Without even realizing it, he was our God. Right. Another crazy thing that you're thought, I mean, that you're taught is that he can read your mind and he hears your prayers.
Oh, wow.
He hears your prayers. So that was a big thing for us because it was like, so he is basically put in that position of God because he can hear our prayers.
Right. Absolutely.
And we're told that he can read our minds. So like he knows what we're thinking about. And that's kind of like, you know, you don't want to be thinking wrong. You don't want to do anything wrong. You don't want to hurt the apostle at any time. So it's always about making him happy or bringing a smile to his face. Because if we do that, we will be rewarded with blessings.
Was Samuel the apostle the whole time that you were at the church?
He was the apostle.
Okay.
And then he passed away in December 8th, 2014. And then Nason, December 14, went into power. And okay. So I was in there as well. Oh, I was in the cult during that time when he came into power.
What was that like, having someone else take over? Was it like a dramatic thing?
Well, he had been sick. He was sick. And so, but, okay, so the teaching for us was that he was going to turn us into God. Like, he was going to give us to God. When he left, we were all leaving. So I remember when they said he passed, I like grabbed my kids. I got everything because I felt like it was the end of the world. I thought the world was ending because there was no longer an apostle. And so to me, it was the end of the world. And I was just like holding on to my kids thinking, when is God going to come? Like, God's going to come because the apostle is going to turn us into God. Mm-hmm. Like, he is going to go and deliver us. Deliver would be the thing. Deliver his people to God. So we were scared. We thought we were alone. And we thought, like, the people that died in between the time, that time was, it was, like, very, very scary because who was going to save us? We didn't have salvation at that time, and we were lost. We were, like, little kids looking for something to grab onto. So they put us in a consecration for 7 days. And this is, like, 24 hours, like, all the time, all the time, all the time. You're fasting. You're doing this. What they told us is that God hasn't left us, but ask God to reveal who's going to be the next apostle because we're not alone. So, okay, good. We're not alone. But do we have, if somebody's going to continue or what? And then they started saying, ask God to reveal the next apostle. Oh, so there's going to be somebody else. All right. So that's what we started doing. We start praying and asking God. And so it was a seven day of all day praying and prayer and prayer. And then at 2 something in the morning, now think about this, at 2 o'clock in the morning, they announce Nason is the next apostle. And so by then we are all exhausted. We are all like in a trance from what we're going through with the need of somebody else, that when they give a name, everybody is just like, yes. There was people that didn't believe it. Like, I struggled a little bit with it. But it was like a relief to know that there is an apostle. And because there's an apostle, I have opportunity for salvation. Mm. And I wasn't going to die.
And now, was it expected that he would be the next apostle, or was there other options? Or was it pretty much like, okay, yeah, that looking back, was it to be expected?
We weren't given, oh, yes, this is going to be the person or whatever. But they started putting like little signs out there, little things that would say, and then Nason would be the one that would do like major events, things like that. So when his name was called, it was kind of expected, but it was still we were like all exhausted. So
yeah,
I think it was more of, thank God we have somebody, because we need it. Like, the people of God needs, it has that need to have somebody to forgive the sins. It has a need to be led by somebody. And that was the deal. Like, okay, now we have a leader. Now we have somebody that's going to guide us.
Now, going back a little bit, so you're obviously raised here. Did you get married when you were in the church?
I was at the age of 14 forced to be married to a person who was not a good person. But the minister said they take her and take her to get married. So my blessing was in obedience. And so that's what I did.
At 14.
I was 18.
Oh, okay.
15. But I was taught to obey. You don't question. And I was in a very abusive relationship. I went several times to ministers, and they said, well, these are your crosses of suffering. Several crazy things, like they would say, what did you do to make him mad at you that he would get to the point to hit you? So they make it seem like it's your fault. What did you, why did you talk back to your husband? So basically you don't have a voice. You're not allowed to do any of that. Another survivor told me she was told that, Jesus suffered 39 lashes. What's a few cuts and bruises for the salvation of your children? Yeah.
To use your children. Oh.
They use the children for everything, because it's like, you can't leave your husband because then your children will be, they'll go to hell because they won't be saved if you leave. Their salvation from the age of when they're born to 14, you're in charge of their salvation. So if you aren't doing the things of the Lord, then they don't go to they don't go to heaven, they go to hell. And that's on you. So when when there's anything, because what is most important that a person has is your children, because you created them, you loved them, you know, you helped them, all of those things, and you thank God that he gave you something to love and something that's going to love you unconditionally. But then you're putting them in a place where they'll go to hell, or God will punish you through your children because you're not obeying what a minister says or what your husband is saying. And that's a really difficult situation to be in.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, in the actual, like, church, like when you would go to church on Sunday or whatever, were all the kids in the service? Yes.
We went to church every day. Three times a day, 5 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6:30. You're taught to go to at least one. You're told, like, your body needs food. Your spirit needs to be fed daily as well. So it's a lot of indoctrination. A lot of indoctrination, three times a day. Like, in the summer times, we sometimes went to all three prayers. This is how much we were involved in the church, that as children, when we went home, we played church. So we didn't know anything else. If a child is playing church, it's because that's all they know. And when we would go swimming or whatever, we would baptize each other. Like,
oh my God.
It's what we did. So you have so much indoctrination three times a day. And this is one of the reasons that they say that is because you're supposed to give your tithes to God. Mm. And you give 10% of your time. There's 24 hours in a day. So 5:30, the 5 a.m. prayer is usually a 30-minute prayer. And then you have two other prayers, which are 1 hour. So you're giving God your tithe by coming to church your 2 hours and a half.
Wow.
So you're giving God your tithe during your time with prayer.
So every single day you went to church?
Yes.
Oh,
and if you didn't go to church, well, you need to ask God to forgive you because you didn't feed your soul. And attendance is taken, and they'll be like, and they have it like posted in the back.
What?
So people know if you don't come to your church, or you missed a day or something like that. And if you miss certain days, like certain times, or let's say a few days in a row, they will like send somebody out to look for you and say, hey, we haven't seen you at church in a few days. What's going on? We're here to help you revive your spirit.
Very hard to leave, to just up and leave without being noticed.
It used to be.
Okay.
Now that Nason, the apostle, was arrested and he is in prison, now if you don't believe in the apostle, basically you're cut out, you're dead. Oh. So it doesn't matter anymore.
Okay, so you got married at 18. You, so your marriage was arranged. It was basically, this is who you're married, or you kind of were able to choose?
Well, no, like, it was an issue that my father said, my daughter is basically 18 and she's out of the house. It was a really weird situation. So they said, well, she needs to get married. And so I just, my job was just to obey. At the when you're in a cult, and people need to understand this, that you don't have a decision, you don't have a right, especially as a child or as a girl, but you're taught to obey everything that you're told, and you don't have a right to say no. You don't, because you lose everything. But when you're in a cult, and a high control cult like this, if you know we're going to church 3 times a day, that tells you a lot of indoctrination. But and they tell you to do something, you don't question. But your mind is actually a lot younger. Because I would say, like, at the age of 14 or 15, I still wanted to play with dolls. So mentally, you're not at your age level. Like, you can be in school and learning and stuff like that, but you still really think as a child. And that's the truth, that you still have that child mentality, because you've been controlled and you've been in this bubble your whole life, and you don't know anything different except for obey what you're told and listen to what you're told.
And so at 18, were they basically like needing you to be married so that someone else was in charge of you?
No, it wasn't like that. My situation was a little bit different because, so we went to go eat with some friends. It was me and my sister, and we came back 5 minutes late because it was an accident or something, and our father kicked us out because we were late. And we were sent to an aunt, but she wasn't from the belief, so it was really hard for us to be there. And so my sister said, hey, the boys are going to be getting in, because we were with some boys and another girl. It was one of my friend's boyfriends and me and my sister. And so it was 2 guys, 2 girls. We dropped off the girl. And then when we came to the house, my dad kicked us out. We went to my aunt's house. But she was in a very toxic relationship, and she was in a very, she wasn't from the cult, so her way of living was totally different than what we were used to. And you come from a place where it's like everything is sacred, everything's about the church, to go to a place where you're in a toxic environment is really hard. So my sister said, oh, the boys are going to get an apartment. We could get one room, they get another room. And then I'm like, oh, okay. But we get to this apartment, and then she goes and gets married. And she's like, you need to get married with him. I'm like, no, I don't want to. And she tells my dad, Elisa is not married. He tells the minister. And so they say, Elisa, you have to go get married. So take her today to go get married. So that's what I did.
And then you had kiddos?
I had 5.
During this time? Okay. Wow. While you were in the church still?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I actually only have 2.5 years out of the church. In December, I'll have 3 years.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That I didn't realize it was that like recent that you got out.
Yeah.
Good for you. Oh my goodness. So there's a lot of you, and the whole time you were going to the same location as far as the church that you went to?
Well, I was in Houston, and then from Houston, we moved over here to Luling area, and I was in the Luling church, and that's where I exited from also.
Okay.
I left from the Luling church as well.
You had your children. Did that like change anything with what you thought of the church, or were you still very, very devoted?
Oh, I was very devoted. I still presented my children. In the church, you present your children before their 40 days, and you present them, and you say you're going to bring them up in the doctrine of the church. You also give the church the right and to be able to discipline your child. That's another thing, because anybody from the cult can discipline your child. That's what you gave permission for when you presented them before God and before the church. So we would be disciplined by members, and we would be disciplined by like the people that took care of us in the children's studies and taught us. Let's say we didn't do something right or whatever, they would punish us or spank us. Any member from the church could spank you. at any time. At any time, let's say you're kind of dozing off or whatever, they'll stand you up in church and humiliate you basically because you're falling asleep or not paying attention. So there was so much, there's so many different type of abuses that happened, which at the time I didn't understand that there were abuses. Right. I thought that these were the way things were. But I did raise them in that, and I'm grateful that they're also out. But I did raise them in that belief, and I had just recently had a really hard conversation with my son because he was like, "Mom, why did you do these things?" He wanted me to take accountability for the things that I forced them to do, like to go to church, to help at the church, to help clean the church, to do the different activities, the car washes, and basically go to church. He wanted to play football, but he couldn't play football if he didn't go to church. So I had to make him go to the 5 a.m. church because he was going to miss the 6 p.m. church or 6:30. So he's like, you made me do these things, and you need to take accountability. And at first I would say, well, that's because that was the teaching of the church. It's the teaching of the church. This is what I knew. But he's like, yes, but the church wasn't telling you to do these things to us. And I'm like, but I was brainwashed, and I thought that this was the best thing for you. And he's like, no, but you made the, you did these things to us. And then I had to realize I did do those things. I had to accept my fault in it and apologize for it. But I told him, I can't really apologize for it. I can accept it because I did do those things. I did force you to do these things. But at that time, that's what I thought was best for you.
Right.
For your soul, for your salvation. Yes, but you left us and you would go work at church and you would leave us. You didn't care who was taking care of us or if we ate or whatever. I was like, I did those things, but I had to do it to save your soul, because if I wasn't doing the things of the Lord, you wouldn't be saved.
Right.
So it's a really hard, it's really hard because the church has a lot to do with it, but he tells me, no, but you need to take accountability for us as well. And I'm like, you're right. I do.
That is, it's so hard because you're right. It's like you are so indoctrinated, especially when you're bored into it. Your whole life, basically, this is how you were raised. So this is how you're going to raise your kids. This is what you're told from the pulpit or whatever. And so, yes, it's, you're the mom still, but you have so little control, you know, because like, well, you said, you think you're doing what's right.
Right, exactly. But this is a big deal in La Luz del Mundo. This is something that so many don't realize, that there is a lot of domestic violence in La Luz del Mundo. And that has to do with you're being ran by, like, if you want to travel, you got to get permission for your, from your minister. If you want to study, you have to ask your permission, your minister to study. You go to your minister for everything because he is the arms, the feet, the legs, the nose, the ears of the apostle. So he's representing the apostle. He, your minister is above your parents. You go to them before you go to your parent.
Wow.
So who runs that house? The minister runs that house. So what happens in the home? Since the husband doesn't have the full control of the house, the ministers do. So then the husband comes in and wants to be a man. And how do they?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do that because they don't have control. a fine control and they're abusive to their wife or their children or whatever, because they're not really a man. The man is the minister because he runs that house. You give all your offerings. You do. If he calls you, if my minister called me at 3 o'clock in the morning and told me I needed to be somewhere, that's what I needed to do. Even if my husband told me not to.
Wow.
Even if, even if my children were sick or whatever, I had to obey. So the husband is really not, like, he could say, oh, he's the head of the household, but the head of the household is actually the church, the ministers. They run the houses. So the domestic violence comes in because the man really doesn't have the control. So he seeks control and he seeks to find a place and he seeks to make himself bigger and heard or whatever. So what's the easiest thing to do is hit the children, hit the mother, be loud with them, because
that's so sad. And you think there's probably so many suffering that fate.
Yes, because there is. And there is. And actually, as a member of La Luz del Mundo, all of us, because La Luz del Mundo, and I'm sure other places say this as well, is that the church was our home. It was we sometimes spent more time at church than we did at our own. But we called it our spiritual home. We called it our house of prayer. We called it the feet of God and our home. It was always our home, like our homes. We were going all the time. Like, that's where I went to pray. That's where I went to do everything, in my spiritual home. But in our spiritual home, we were also violated domestically, because from the pulpit, the minister would tell us stuff verbally abuse us. The ministers, the members, and your parents also abused you physically. Because if you didn't listen, the minister could spank you. The person, whoever saw you do anything, would spank you. Your parents would spank you because somebody else had to spank you. So these are forms. It's a physical abuse. We suffer economic abuse where we were controlled, isolated, and we were frightened. We were emotional abuse. I'm sorry. The emotional abuse is when we're controlled, frightened, and isolated. Economic abuse is when we gave all our money to the churches. There was always offerings. Of course, you had to give your 10%, your tithe. Plus, on top of that, you had to give your special offerings, or offerings for the bills and offerings for the apostle or the apostle's family or the trip the minister was going to take. So you all had to give most of your money. And then we also... psychological views, where words were used to manipulate, hurt, weaken, and install fear in us. Then we were threatened. If we didn't do this or that, we were going to go to hell. So we were always walking on eggshells. We were frightened, intimidated, terrorized, manipulated, hurt, humiliated, blamed, and shamed all the time. So your self-esteem as a man or woman is this big. On top of that, you're controlled, where you have to dress a certain way. So in La Luz del Mundo, women sit on one side and men sit on the other side. So you don't sit together. So the church separates you for time of prayer. And they use a scripture where it says to separate for time of prayer. And then you come back together after prayer. So you give time at your... all of your time or your thoughts or whatever to God. So they use that. But when you get out, they also don't allow the ones that have stayed in there to continue communication with you, because you know,
like, if you leave the church.
Yes, so you're shunned.
Okay.
So I can say I've lost several family members, five siblings, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, because of the cult. And it's ugly, because La Luz del Mundo, the God of La Luz del Mundo is a God of hate. And I say that. And I can say that because I was a member of it. It's a God of hate because it teaches you to hate a person that is no longer in that same belief.
Yeah.
It teaches children, if your parent doesn't believe in the apostle, he's dead to you. when a parent at the age of 14, they bring the children up before the Lord, or before the church, I'm sorry, and they will ask the child if they want to continue in the path of the Lord. If they say yes, wonderful, they get baptized. If they say no, the teaching is to kick that child out. So who's going to say no? Who's going to say no? You really, and they say, oh, you have free will. You don't have free will, because at the age of 14, who's going to want to be out in the street when this is all you know? But if you don't want to continue in the path, the parent has to kick you out. So if you're, there's kids right now. I have a friend who still has family in the church, and they did a family gathering. And these little 9-10-year-old kids are telling their cousins that they're going to go to hell because they don't go to church and they don't believe in the Lord. This is a teaching of hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I no longer serve that God of hate. I serve a God of love, a God of compassion, a God of understanding. And it's just totally different. I would wake up in the morning, because you're taught to pray a lot. You're taught to pray before you go to sleep, when you wake up. And I remember when I would wake up, I would ask God to forgive me because I may have offended him in one of my dreams. Something I can't control, but I still could have offended God in a dream, right? But now I wake up and I say, thank you, God, for a new day. Totally different. I was living in fear. Everything that I did, everything that I was just always on, always fear. That anything and everything that God was going to punish me. And a teaching in the church is that the day that you don't have some type of suffering, pray to God because he didn't remember you.
It's just so damaging. And I'm sure you being so fresh out, I've been out of mind for, oh gosh, I think 12 years now. But there's still moments that you catch yourself. Yeah, or you'll be like, I can't believe I just thought that about that person. Like, who am I to judge that person? Or it's very ingrained.
Judgy pants on, right?
Yes.
That's what I say.
Always.
I need to take my judgy pants off.
Yes.
I've gone to, since I've been out, a few friends have invited me to go to their churches. Mm. And I'm like, okay. But then I go and I'm, this is not right. Or like, I'm not comfortable here. Or they're talking and this is the house of the Lord and this and that. I go in with my judgy pants and I'm like, yeah. Elisa. Mm. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Just go and try this. I think it's too fresh for me still.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still have those judgy pants on that I need to.
It's hard. Off. Yeah,
like,
well.
Just something so simple as dressing. Like we were only allowed to dress a certain way. No exposure, basically, all the way down. You're wearing a dress. A woman always wore a dress all the way down to four fingers from the ankle is how we dressed.
Okay.
And they would use the Bible to manipulate how the way we needed to dress. And so when I was getting out, I still wore my skirts. And one day, so I got out in January and then October, because I was still wearing my skirts. So nobody really knew that I was really out.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So then when I was like, I listened to a video. It was about the historian people talking about why the sisters in the church wore skirts and they can't wear pants. And then that video says, the historian of the church says, well, some ladies in their modesty came to church. This is at the beginning with Aaron, the first apostle. It said they came to church in their modesty with long dresses. The apostle saw it. He liked it. And that's why it became doctrine. And I was like, wait, what? Like, so because he liked it, he found scriptures, manipulated the scriptures, and made it into this is now doctrine.
Wow.
So that same day, I went and got some pants and went to the store and I wore pants. And that was my first time wearing pants because it was like a form of protesting and a form of striking back. Like, just because he saw somebody, he made it so that all of these members, my whole life, like being made fun of in school and stuff like that, because we had wore skirts all the time. Like, couldn't do certain things because we had to wear skirts, and you can't ride a bike.
Right.
You can't do certain things because you're wearing these long, big old skirts.
Mm-hmm.
And to find out, it was just because he saw somebody and decided that, hey, that's scripture.
Oh, yeah.
When I was young, I wanted to get earrings. And all my little friends and my teachers, everybody at school had earrings. And in the church, we don't wear earrings.
Right.
And this is another thing that I'm telling you because it's about, like, liberation. But I told my father that I wanted to get my ears pierced, like my friends. He's like, no, Mija, we don't do that. So he takes me to the minister, and he tells the minister, and then the minister, he comes down to me, like, right in my face. So, like, he's not coming to my level. He comes looking down. Mm. So I'm this little girl, maybe 9, 10 years old, because I was in the 4th, 5th grade. And if he says, are you a slave? I'm like, what? You know, all confused. Are you a slave? And I'm like, no. He's like, are you sure you're not a slave? And I'm like, no. Because in the old days, the masters put certain type of earrings on their slaves so that these slaves were identified. And I'm like, okay. Are you an animal? What? Are you an animal? Well, the farmers, they put piercings and numbers on their cattle so that they know who that cattle belongs to. So are you an animal? I'm like, no. So you see, all of these people with earrings, they all are slaves to the devil. So as a child, I went to everywhere, to church, to school. Well, not church, but to school, to the stores, to playgrounds, anything like that. And there was people with earrings. And it was so hard for me to think that my teacher was going to hell, or my best friend or a friend in school was going to hell because they had earrings and they were slaves to the devil. And that stayed with me forever. And so when I got out, I was looking in the Bible about where it talks about the woman can wear earrings. And it doesn't say it. And actually in Genesis, when Isaac sends, they send someone to get a wife for one of the slaves to go get a wife for Isaac, he gives her a nose ring and some earrings as a gift. And then in Ezekiel, God is seeing the wife, seeing the people of Israel as his wife. And he says he puts a crown on them, a nose ring and earrings. So I was like, if God can adorn his wife, and he's using that example that the church is his bride, and he adorned his bride with a crown, with a nose ring and earrings, why can't I be adorned with earrings?
Oh, wow.
So I went and got my ears pierced, and like, and I hear this 46-year-old woman getting ears pierced for the first time, and I was so excited. I kept looking at him.
I did.
Because it's like the ultimate sign of breaking out.
You can
stop wearing the skirts and wear pants, and that's a liberation also.
Yeah.
But when you put a hole in your ear, that's a whole different thing. Like, that it was so against, like, you know, you're not part of this anymore because you're wearing earrings.
Right. Yes.
We weren't supposed to cut it. And so when I cut my hair, it was like I was cutting all the negative off.
And
starting anew, although I didn't cut all my hair, I just went to my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because that was not allowed in the church.
Right.
So cutting all of that hair off was like, it felt like light, of course, because a lot of the hair, but I felt so much lighter. It was like I was becoming a new person.
Yeah.
And I did all of these things, and I took different baby steps to do them. I didn't do them all at once. Some people get out and do everything at once. But I think my journey was a lot of healing first. And I'm very fortunate that I work in the building where we're mental health, where I can just grab a therapist and like, I'm struggling. I need help right now.
That's amazing.
Where, you know, I can come and get that help. And I had a therapist that was from a religious background at the time. And I had to go to her crying. I'm like, I don't know who Elisa is. And that's the thing, that we were so used to serving the church, serving the ministers, serving the hermanos, serving your children, serving everybody that we never served ourselves.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to take care of Elisa. Mm-hmm. What is Elisa like? Mm-hmm. What does Elisa want to do? How does Elisa want to rest? How does Elisa heal? Like, yeah. How can Elisa, because I wasn't going to church anymore, so how do I fill that time up? Because my time was so consumed with this. Now I have all this free time. What do I do with it? Yes. So you find, you eventually start finding things to get, you know, to fill in that time.
Yeah.
But time for me was a very, very hard thing to get over because I knew at 6:30 this was happening. At 6:35 this was happening. At 6:40 this was happening. Wow. So like everything and even waking up at a certain time and all of that was so hard to get to undo.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't look at the clock so much, but that was a hard thing to stop.
I bet. Now, what was it that prompted you or had you start thinking about leaving? And how did you leave? Did you just up and leave or how did that work?
Well, the apostle, Nason Joaquin Garcia, he was arrested for sexual crimes. Well, he was arrested. And then the day he was arrested, the next day, we didn't know he was arrested, but the next day they sent us a message. We all need to be in the church, all in the temple, and there's a special announcement. So we go to the temple and they bring down this big, huge monitor thing that we would use to watch videos and stuff. And so they bring it down and then there's a live transmission where the bishops tell us that the apostle has been arrested and that they would be our only means of communication and that they would be the ones that would tell us the true things that were going on for us not to go onto the internet because it would affect our faith. So I didn't. I listened to what they were saying or whatever, but then COVID hit in 2020.
Right.
So COVID hit because in 2019 he was arrested.
Okay.
COVID hit, so they had to close the churches down. So we were listening. We had to fix the area in our home where we had a chair for the boys, the other side for the girls, fix it up like if we were in the temple.
Wow.
With some flowers and fix up your little temple area. You listen to the church 3 times a day, and it was being broadcast. So it was on YouTube. You could go in there and like if I'd be driving, I could go in there and listen to it again. Mm. And, you know, just the indoctrination continued because the temples were closed. So we had to listen to it. New Year's comes for 2021 and my brother Moses, he was already out, but I didn't really know he was out like that. He says, hey, Elisa, come over here for New Year's. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, we'll go to my brother's house and we can watch the transmission there because it was being broadcast live. I'll watch it there with my brother. And when I get over there, he starts telling me, what do you think about the arrest of Nason and this? And I was like, ah, it's no big deal. He'll be out. It's probably an immigration thing because I never looked it up. I was obeying because I didn't want it to affect my faith. But my brother starts telling me stuff and I'm listening to him. But as I'm listening to him, because we're taught to rebuke the bad spirits or bad thoughts and bad conversations because they will affect our faith, right? So my brother's talking to me, is telling me these things. And in my head, I'm looking at him, but in my head, I'm saying, glory to Christ, in the name of Jesus Christ, I rebuke you. You know, in my head, I'm thinking these. But then he asks a question. He tells me, Elisa, let me ask you a question. So now I have to actually start listening because I got to answer a question. So he says, do you remember when the apostle of God was out and he was telling us to pray for all our first responders and all of the people that were in the offices and the police officers and all of these people, everybody, we were supposed to pray for them, all the government, because God put them in place and this and that. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, isn't it funny that when Nason got arrested, all of a sudden everybody's corrupt? The government's corrupt. The police officers are corrupt. Everybody's corrupt. But before they weren't. And I was like, yeah, that is crazy. But I still didn't. And then he says, do you remember that Nason told us before his arrest or whatever, he says, for all of us to learn a different language so we can speak the word of God in different languages or to go to different places. So we were all trying to learn different languages and stuff like that. I was like, yeah. And he goes, he said to use the internet, that the internet would help us do these things, and knowledge is power, and get your power from the internet, but not look at anything bad, but, you know, you use it to learn and to get wiser and stuff like that, to learn stuff. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, how come is it they're trying to take away your power now by telling you you can't look at these things? And wow, I didn't think of that. And he goes, knowledge is power, Elisa. And I'm like, okay. And he says, I'm going to send you some videos, and if you want to watch them or whatever, you can watch them. And I said, okay. But see, what he did was he planted that seed with those questions, because it made me have to respond to them. Mm-hmm. The other ones, when he was just telling me stuff, I didn't have to respond to them. But the questions, I did have to respond.
Wow.
And so he starts sending me videos, and I tell him, if I'm guided to look at them, I will. He starts sending me videos and of the court things or whatever, and I wasn't looking at him. And then one day I was like, let me just look at one, see what he's saying. And then it's of one of the police officers that had interviewed one of the Jane Does. Mm. And he's saying how the apostle had, she had gone in to give him coffee, and then the apostle had put his hands in her underwear. And then it's like, oh, shoot. Mm. It's sexual stuff. I have a nonprofit called A Birthday to Remember, and I do birthday parties for kids in foster facilities and orphanages. And majority of these kids were taken away because of sexual abuse. Mm. And how am I going to be following a person who sexually assaulted three minors?
Mm.
And there's more victims, but the three have been brave enough to talk. So my world came down.
Wow.
How can I believe that God would be in a man who would do things to little kids?
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I can't believe in a man who would harm a child. I can't believe in a man who would rape a child. I can't. So my whole world came crashing down because he was my God.
Mm.
And he was arrested. And I was invited to go to the day that they did this. Well, he pled guilty on the 3rd of June, 2022. He pled guilty. And I was invited to go to the sentencing.
Mm.
And I went to the sentencing. And it was really hard because when I would see Nason before, he was my apostle. Mm. He was up here. He was like the ultimate thing. And now he comes in as a prisoner. And I just see like this black, the energy, like it was so heavy, it was so dark. And it was hard to put him, my God, into a devil. That was really something that I had to work on. But then listening to what he did to the girls, and when the girls did their talk and they talked about what he did to them, and I'm like, and this was the God that, this was the man that I thought was going to save me? And this is the person who was in charge of my salvation? This is a person who would forgive my sins? And he did these things to these kids? So yeah, I...
And then after you kind of knew more, then it was it made it easier for you to leave.
Yes. After since COVID was still going.
Oh, true. Yeah.
They started opening the temples back up. They started opening the churches back up. But they would do it where only certain people could go. And this is your day. The rest of the days you watch on. So only maybe 10, 15 people would go. And so it was a day for me to go. And I go in just like normal. And I'm sitting on my side. And they give me a mask and then a cave, 95 over that. Mm. And then another thing like here. And I I remember I started like, they were asking for a song and I started to like have a panic attack during church. And I was like, what is going on with me? Why am I work in a hospital. The masks don't bother me. What is going on? Like, so it's like my body already rejecting the church too. So I had a panic attack and I had to leave. And that was the last time I ever went.
Wow.
I never went back. I never went back. And I just got into like studying what cults were. Like I said in the beginning, I didn't want to accept that it was a cult. I kept saying, no, it's not a cult. It's a church. And when I looked up the word cult, that's when I really realized I wasn't a cult. Because part of the meaning of a cult is excessive admiration or worship to a particular person or thing. And I was like, that's what we did. Our temples, all of the temple, if you pass along a church of the Light of the World or La Luz del Mundo, it has on the outside NJG, which is not San Joaquin Garcia, on all of the temples. And all of the things that belong to the church, any property or whatever, has those initials on it. And it has nothing. It says, even inside, like the writing or whatever, are words of the apostle. And then on the top, instead of saying, it says nothing about Jesus. It says nothing about God. It has no pictures, no images of Jesus or nothing but the apostle there. So he was our God.
But you and your kids just quit going. And like you said, it was kind of COVID-y. So was that kind of made it a little easier? Yeah. How did they adjust to that? Were they like, oh, cool, yay? Or was
it
hard for them?
They were happy because I wasn't forcing them anymore.
Yeah.
I wasn't forcing them to do stuff. I wasn't forcing them to go help. I wasn't forcing them to, like, I had to do a lot of changing, a lot of healing for myself, for my children, and to be able to get to the point where I can sit down and have the conversation. And I did sit down with them individually and apologize to them individually. A lot of people don't understand that when you get in a cult and you have your children and you force so much stuff on your children, that they deserve to be heard and their feelings deserved also to be validated. I had to sit down and have those tough conversations with them individually and say, how did you feel because I made you do these things? Because I had to do that for them. Because if I felt a certain way, why not see how I made them feel?
Do you think was helpful for you, like in your healing process?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to like fully heal. I'm not fully healed, but I wouldn't be able to continue on my healing without coming to them and apologizing to them for forcing them to do those things. But I did also have to explain that these were teachings that I thought that were right for them and the best for them. But I needed to apologize for them. During that time, I was doing the best that I could with what I knew and what I thought was best for them. And it might not have always been the best thing because nobody's perfect, but it was what I was taught was the right thing. And so I had to apologize to that and build my relationship with my children for that. And because I did have to leave them a lot to go do things for the church. And I had to put them aside. They weren't a priority and they should have been. It should have been a priority, and I didn't make them a priority. My priority was salvation. My priority was church. My priority was what the minister said, and then my husband, and then them. I put them last.
Are they all doing well now? How are you doing?
Yes. They're all happy, exploring new things. They are going places that we weren't allowed to do. Like, we couldn't really travel because, of course, all my money went to the church and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're traveling now. They're experiencing life, and I can just support them. And I have a son that moved to Colorado. That's kind of hard for me, but I still have to love him and talk to him. And I have a son that's in college, and I'm still like, he's still my baby. But
You did say earlier you still have family members that are a part of the church, but do they just truly not talk to you at all?
my brother could be, I can drive. Look, okay, so I have a job and he has a restaurant and we ordered from his little snow cone place and we ordered mm-hmm. from it some fruit and he came to bring it. And he will say hi to everybody and I will be sitting there and he won't even say hi to me. Wow. He won't acknowledge me. It's like I am dead because that's the teaching. They're taught that the people that have gone out, they're gangrene, they're cancer, they're the worst thing in the world. And so anybody who's gotten out is dead to them.
Nassan is in prison. Who is their leader now? Are they just still... Is he still the leader?
He's
still the leader.
He is leading this church from his prison cell.
Well, I am so thankful that you just took the time to share your story with us. I think this will be so meaningful for so many people. And there's
so much more to talk about.
We might have to do another episode because...
Yeah, I was going to say there is...
Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shani Pant Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires at shannypantshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there. All the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.